Friday, 5 p.m. once again.
I forgot what day of the week it was.
Did you remember? How about what, yeah, not only day of the week, we have the date. It's February 26th, I think. Yeah, the last Friday of February.
Hip, we've been hip, hooray.
Rolling our way through this now for, the pandemic thing for an entire year. It's been rather amazing and really grateful to have WHPC around to allow us to continue doing our show. And it's been quite a privilege to continue this, especially this Friday series, which we call How Music Changed. The series we've been doing for the past 60 weeks now, Heidi, is called Transistor Days. We started playing our favorite pop songs from January 1955. We're doing it up through the end of 1969. And right now, we are in the summer of 69. So if things go as I expect.
69.
Right?
I think there's a song about that.
Isn't that Bryan Adams?
Yeah.
Don't say Ryan Adams. But if things go as planned, we're two more shows in this series, and then we move on. So the thing about the summer of 69, I mean, 1967 seems to have stolen all of the thunder regarding hippie culture in the 60s, earning the moniker the Summer of Love. But I would argue that 1969 bettered 1967 for cultural and musical impact. As the decade ended, youth culture had earned their fully formed identity, and virtually everything relevant in contemporary music had to pass a credibility test, so to speak, for it to be taken seriously.
Yeah, man.
In essence, the hippies had invoked a form of quality control over the artists who represented them, and it worked incredibly well. Now, of course, FM radio had started to gain in popularity around this same time, which is also why we are coming to an end of the Transistor Days series. FM was more laid back, had a less commercial format, and would be obviously better suited for the long-form music that was starting to become popular. It is that change that signals the approaching end of this series. So let's just pick up exactly where we are. Songs from the summer of 1969. First up is an artist who, you want to talk about coming a long way. He was around since before the Summer of Love. Tommy James and the Shondells. Think Moni Moni. I Think We're Alone Now. And imagine the change that happened in just a few years for him, the exponential growth. Tommy James wrote this song himself. He said that he wrote it and he was reading the Book of Revelation. He was reading it, and the phrase itself wasn't exactly in the book, but words from the Book of Revelation struck him and stood out. And he took three words that he had seen and put them together, and he just thought that it was just like maybe one of the best ideas that he'd ever had. And he does say, it's my favorite song of all the songs that I've written, and it's also one of the most requested. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, Tommy James and the Shondells with Crystal Blue Persuasion.
The sun is rising, most definitely. A new day is coming. Ooh, people are changing. Ain't it beautiful? Ooh, crystal blue persuasion. Look to your soul. open your mind.
Gorgeous piece of art, that song, for a hit single. It's something else. Now, of course, everybody who heard it figured that it was, you know, about acid or at least drug culture. But when he was asked, you know, like John Lennon and Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, he denied it entirely, which is obviously a very smart thing to do, because if he didn't deny it, the song would have likely gotten banned.
Right.
And if it got banned, then that would have affected sales and income and everything else. And in fact, the fact that it was totally denied meant that people like Tito Puente were able to do cover versions of it and not have any sense of remorse about it. So good move, Tommy, regardless of what it really is. Next song up, Stevie Wonder, My Cherie Amour, became a hit in 1969, which was actually late because the song was written back in 1967. He wrote it about one of his girlfriends that he met when he was at the Michigan School for the Blind. Named Marsha. The original lyrics were, "Oh my Marsha."
Thank God you changed it.
Right. Well, back then his songwriting partners were Sylvia Moy and Henry Cosby. And they did an awful lot about teaching Stevie how to write. And of course, you know, he was like one of those students that eventually surpassed surpassed the teacher. But at this point in time, they were coming up with some brilliant ideas in order to help him focus. And it didn't hurt that Henry Cosby also produced the song, so he knew exactly how to get the most out of what he was writing with Sylvia and Stevie. So about 2.5 years later, after the song was originally being kicked around, it became a hit on American Radio 90.3 WHPC, Stevie Wonder with My Cherie Amour.
I wish that you were mine.
sometimes on a crowded street. I've been near you, but you never noticed me. My shady armor, won't you tell me how could you ignore that behind that little smile I wore? I wish that you were mine. La la.
Motown songs back to back there, Heidi, showing pretty much how things managed to change at Motown by 1969.
I learned all my best moves from that last song.
Well, I mean, in a way, I guess, so did Junior Walker, because, I mean, up until this point, all of his hits were like that funky, sweaty party music thing, you know, Shotgun and Shake and Finger Pop. But that was losing its appeal by 1969. The smooth soul man thing began to take over, and they were telling him, you got to learn to sing mellow. And so he gave it a shot. He was convinced that the song wasn't going to work. And he's really not the most convincing vocalist, which is why it's so funny that when he finishes the verse, he says, I'm going to blow for you. And then he plays the sax to let the sax do the talking. And then he does the second verse, and it's like, oh, I'm going to blow for you again. And it works. What can I say? We started off the show talking about possibility of a song getting banned because of drug references. Well, this next song did get banned in 1969, although it wasn't due to drugs. It was basically due to a Christ reference. Of course, John Lennon, at this point in time, felt seriously persecuted. The Beatles fans blamed Yoko for everything that was going wrong. And therefore, the press took great pleasure in making her out to be the evil monster who was ruining the band because it sold papers. So John and Yoko are trying to get married. They go through this whole ordeal, and he ends up writing a song about the ordeal of what he had to go through in order to get married. And when he finishes it, he wants to record it right away. And there's nobody around but Paul. So he says, let's just you and me do it. So Paul gets on drums. John plays rhythm guitar. And then they overdub their parts. And in a day, the song is done. They record it. They put it out. And then AM radio pretty much across the United States bans it because he uses the word Christ in the chorus. I'm playing it anyway on American Radio 90.3 WHBC. I don't think anybody's going to object now if I play The Ballad of John and Yoko.
Standing in the dockets of Hampton, trying to get to Holland or France. The man in the match says, you've got to go back. You know they didn't even give us a chance. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're going to crucify me. Finally made the plane into Paris, honeymooning down by the Seine. Peter Brown called to say, you can make it okay. You can get married in Gibraltar near Spain. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Drove from Paris to the Amsterdam Hilton, talking in our beds for a week. The news people said, say what you're doing in bed. I said, we're only trying to get us some peace. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Saving up your money for a rainy day, giving all your clothes to charity. Last night the wife said, oh boy, when you're dead, you don't take nothing with you but your sorrow. Sick. Made a lightning trip to Vienna.
Love that single. Beatles, of course, with The Ballad of John and Yoko.
And that charted?
Oh, yeah.
Despite being banned?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, despite being banned, it did actually, it was the top 10 single. But because it was, I think it was number 8, something like that, which was unusual because it should have been number 1. But there you go. It still sold. Now,
a lot.
If you go back to 1969, America didn't have a clue what type of music was coming from Jamaica. I mean, the influence that it eventually had on our music is incalculable. But in the beginning, it was the other way around. Jamaicans got most of their music from America, listening to late night AM radio, they'd hear the broadcasts,
right,
and then they would want to emulate what they were hearing. And then they would cross that with the rhythms that they knew, Caribbean rhythms, things like calypso. And the two things beginning to meld would end up with some sort of like upbeat ska sound that became gigantic there. But we didn't know what was going on. They knew in England because England and Jamaica were basically, well, they're related.
Jamaica's a crown colony.
Exactly. But it never found its way here in America. That had sound systems. And I could go on and on about how it all developed and what was happening there and how DJs would be in like these things that looked like hot dog trucks with speakers on the top. And they would like just pull into a field and give these gigantic parties and have a great time. Eventually, the music slowed down a little bit. It became rock steady. And the people who were loving this music, they'd call themselves Rude Boys. We missed all of this. But eventually, Desmond Dekker and his producer, Leslie Kong, decided to play up on that imagery by basically coming up with an idea for a song that combined James Bond and the Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack, Ocean's 11, by writing a song called 007 Shantytown. Huge hit there. Again, America didn't have a clue. Somehow, the next single that Desmond Dekker released got distributed in the United States, and it must have sounded like it came from Saturn when it landed here, because there was nothing else like it that ever hit the American charts. And I'm sure that in 1969, we didn't have the slightest clue what Desmond Dekker was saying. But Israelites was a very welcome aberration from the usual top 40 fare. Still one of my favorite reggae songs, and definitely one of my favorite songs from 1969. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here's Desmond Dekker with Israelites.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Call me Israelite, sir. Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Darling, she said I was yours to receive.
Oh, me Israelite.
Shut them a tear up choices ago. I don't want to end up like Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, me Israelite.
After I storm, there must be a call. If you catch me in a farm, you sound your alarm. Bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
Oh, Israelite,
sir. Step my wife and my kids and get back up and not leave me. Darling, she said that was yours to receive.
Oh, Israelite,
sir. Look, you took them a tear up choices ago. I don't want to end up like Bonnie and
Beatles weren't the only band that were going through some significant changes as the decade ended. This was more serious because the Beatles were breaking up. But the Rolling Stones had their own problems. Brian Jones, their guitar player, had died in a swimming pool right after being fired from the band. And it was weird because the Rolling Stones had basically, the last recordings that they had done in 1968 really had blatant references to black magic and occultism. Think Sympathy for the Devil, Jumpin' Jack Flash, violence like Street Fightin' Man, pedophilia, Stray Cat Blues. These were intimidating and controversial topics. So along comes a new guitar player, Mick Taylor, and all of a sudden, when they do a song like Honky Tonk Woman, it sounds like nothing more or less than a joyful celebration of boozy sex. It's like, woo, good times. The Rolling Stones are back, and they sound like they're actually having fun for a change. So on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, meet the new Rolling Stones with Honky Tonk Woman. That's a song that certainly really doesn't need any introduction whatsoever anyway. Now, it's been, I don't know if it's how long it's been since I've played a great miss, but the time has come.
Oh, boy.
Now, this actually doesn't qualify as a song that I truly despise or even, you know, great misses should either be a little bit funny or just like just almost so painfully bad that they would have some humor. I just always disliked this song because it's maudlin. I hate it when songs are emotionally manipulative in a really baldly unashamed manner. And this is that exact song. Ruby, don't take your love to town. What I didn't know is that there's a bit of a storied history here. It's written by Mel Tillis. And I'll bet you didn't know, Heidi, that Waylon Jennings was the first person to record this.
No.
Waylon Jennings recorded it back in 1966. Then Johnny Darrell did a recording of it, and it became top 10 on the country charts for him in 67. So by the time Kenny Rogers in the first edition had it, he was getting sloppy thirds. And yet he's the one who brought it onto the pop charts and got it into the top 10, rising up to number 6. It was so easy for him. They say that he sang the song in one take. And I don't know. Basically, taking the idea of a war veteran in a wheelchair and playing up the emotional pathos of what's going on in the song, I find it manipulative, but that's just me. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, Kenny Rogers in the first edition with Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town.
You've painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair. Ruby, are you contemplating going out somewhere? The shadow on the wall tells me the sun is going down. Take your love to town. It wasn't me that started that old crazy Asian war, but I was proud to go and do my patriotic chore. And yes, it's true that I'm not the man I used to be. Some company. It's hard to love a man whose legs are bent and paralyzed. And the wants and the needs of a woman your age, Ruby, I realize. But it won't be long, I've heard them say, until I'm not around. Your love to town. She's leaving now, 'cause I just heard the slamming of the door. The way I know I've heard it slam 100 times before. And if I could move, I'd get my gun and put her in the ground. Take your love to town. For God's sakes, turn around.
Kenny Rogers at the beginning of his career with what I considered to be two ridiculous songs, just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in, followed by Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town. Things would eventually change for him. That's for sure. Now, one of my favorite things about doing this when I was like, you know, doing the research for the book, and even afterward when I was updating the list, was finding top 40 songs that maybe I didn't know in its time or in that eventually jumped out at me and appealed to me. And this is definitely one of them. This is a song that never went any higher than number 28 in the summer of 1969. And it's by an artist who went by the nickname the Tan Canary. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
You know, he's a New Orleans guy. And this is what I think what brought him to my attention, because his name is Johnny Adams. And he was born in New Orleans, and all of his early hits from the early 60s were produced by Mack Rebennack and Eddie Bowe. And you catch him on jukeboxes all over New Orleans at that point in time. But his neighbor was Dorothy Labastri, the person who wrote some of the words for Little Richard back in the early 50s, you know? And she's the one who got him to sing, because that was his next door neighbor. She goes, you got a good voice. You should be a singer. So the thing is, he eventually ends up getting signed in the late 60s to Shelby Singleton's Nashville label. And he records a song called Reconsider Me. It's a country song that Singleton produced. I think it's gorgeous. From this point on, he ended up with basically a steady performance playing at a place called Dorothy's Medallion Lounge in New Orleans. Never heard of it.
Nope.
I'm sure it's long gone. But eventually he would be on Rounder Records, and he'd be a staple at Jazz Fest pretty much through the entire 80s. And he's an astounding singer, and I'm happy, if you don't know him, to introduce him to you right here. Reconsider Me is the name of the track. Johnny Adams is the artist on American at Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Yes, it's really me. After all the wrong I've done, I guess you're surprised to see me.
That's what I call a tear in your beer jukebox song. That's just stunning. I think that's the first time that I ever heard that was like in a bar, and that came on and I got goosebumps, and I had to run over to see what it was. And I saw the name Johnny Adams, and I'm like, I don't know who that is, but that's one of the best singers I've ever heard down here. It's just strange that, you know, his legacy isn't that big, but there you have it. If you look him up, you know, it won't hurt. Just fantastic song, Reconsider Me by Johnny Adams. All right, next up, The Temptations. This song, again, now Norman Whitfield has pretty much taken over the band at this point in time. He's written this song with Barrett Strong. gives it to the band to record, and it becomes a number one hit. In between, Sugar Sugar by the Archies knocked that off of the chart, a song that we're not playing in this series, simply because I just don't think it qualifies. It's not that good. It's okay. And the song that replaced it was Suspicious Minds by Elvis Presley, which I'm pretty sure you'll be hearing that next week. Now, it was, believe it or not, this was only the second number one hit for the Temptations. They hadn't had a number one hit going all the way back to January of 1965 with My Girl. That was their only other number one hit up until this point. So this became one of their best-selling singles of all time at this point in time in 1969. On American Radio 90.3, WHPC, here are the Temptations with I Can't Get Next to You.
Hold it. Listen.
That surprises me when I hear that that's their second number one hit. With all the fabulous hit songs that the Temptations had, that's only their second number one hit. Now, on a similar note, Heidi, I've got to ask you this question. I'm not trying to embarrass you because I promise you I would have gotten this wrong myself. But if I was going to ask you, Creedence Clearwater Revival, obviously, I'd say they were one of the best singles artists at the end of the 60s into the early 70s. How many number one hits do you think they had?
At this point?
And total. In their entire career.
Oh, in their career? Yeah. I have no idea. One?
Zero.
Ha!
They never had a single number one hit.
That's
they
crazy.
Had nine top 10 hits.
Okay.
They've had four songs that went to number two, another that went to number three, another that went to number four, another that went to number six. It's just, look at the draw. It's such a shame.
Huh.
This is one of those songs that ended up stopping it. It was their third number two hit in a row. It's called Green River. It's one of those songs that I heard so often. I never bothered to even listen to the lyrics for maybe 30 years. The guitar told me everything I needed to know. you listen to the guitar and you're like, oh, this is a guy singing about being in the backwoods and everything else. It doesn't even need words. You could have just been making them up and singing syllabics and you would have gotten everything that the song was about. Still a very brilliant song. On American Radio 90.3 WHBC is Creedence Clearwater Revival with Green River. Well, like I said, the show, as you know, is about the summer of 1969. And we can't talk about the summer of 1969 without discussing the weekend of August 15 to 17, when an event went down in the rural part of upstate New York that has since come to signify the apogee of the entire youth movement of the 60s. White Lake, in the town of Bethel, Sullivan County, became a gathering place for something like 500,000 souls to celebrate peace and music. Because the event was named before a permanent site was secured, it became known around the world as Woodstock, after a township that was nearly 100 miles away from where it actually took place. One of the stars, one of the biggest stars of Woodstock, was Sly and the Family Stone. They came on. It was decided that what they had to do in order to keep the natives from getting too restless was play music 24/7. So they'd play through the night. Sly and the Family Stone came on Sunday morning at 3 a.m.
Wow.
This was just before the torrential downpour that was going to chase away a large part of the crowd. And the swarming sea of humanity saw basically a musical representation of itself. Black, white, male, female. The Sly and the Family Stone embodied a microcosm of the Woodstock experience. And it, for a while, it all seemed so beautiful. It was, for a short while, 1967, all over again. I mean, that would change in just less than a year. But while this was all going down, Sly and the Family Stone had a hit on the pop charts. Nothing that they played that day, but it was a gorgeous song and a song about the summertime and one of my favorite hits by Sly and the Family Stone from August 1969. Here's Hot Fun in the Summertime.
Summer days.
I don't think summer songs get much better than that one. Hot fun in the summertime. Now, we have time for one more song, Heidi. And like when I played the Kenny Rogers song, I said it had a storied past that I had no idea about with who recorded it in the first place. This song is a total mystery to me. I just cannot believe what I discovered in doing my research. The song Get Together, I always presumed that it was written by Jesse Colin Young, because that's the famous version by the Youngbloods. Ah. Well, it turns out it was written by Dino Volente of Quicksilver Messenger Service, the same guy who wrote Have Another Hit of Fresh Air. And he wrote it back in 1964, and it was originally recorded by none other than the Kingston Trio in 64. Then We Five recorded it in 1965, and they had a minor hit with it. Jefferson Airplane had a version of it on their first album, Jefferson Airplane Takes Off. It wasn't until in 1969, the National Conference of Christians and Jews made a public service announcement as a call for brotherhood. And they recorded a version of the song by the Youngbloods in a commercial that made it famous all over again. And which is why I have always associated it to, and I think most people do associate it with the Youngbloods and Jesse Colin Young. Well, you know, shame on me. There's a lot of history that we just found out. So thanks for listening, folks. We've got two more shows to do to finish this series. So we'll see you next week. Here are the Youngbloods with Get Together on 90.3 WHPC.
Love is but a song we sing, fears the way we die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now. Some may come and some may go, he will surely pay his. When the one that left us, yeah, turns for us at last. We are but a moment's sunlight fading in the grass. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another. Together, try to love one another right now. Listen.
key to love and fear, all in your trembling hand. Just one key unlocks them both, it's there at your command. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together. Together, try.